Welcome to the next installment of the Science Progress interview series. I'm Assistant Editor Andrew Pratt, and today I have with us in the studio Jana Rudnick, who is the director of In the Family, which is a movie about her experience getting tested for the BRCA1 gene, which is a mutation which predisposes people to breast cancer. Welcome to the studio. Thanks for joining us today, Jana.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I want to sort of just start off by, can you tell us just a little bit about when you knew that you needed to make this movie and why?
Sure. When I was 27 years old, I got tested for BRCA, for both genes, BRCA1 and 2, and found out that, like my mother, I was positive for a mutation on the BRCA1 gene. And I received a piece of paper that said positive for a deleterious mutation and was stunned by the information and didn't exactly know how to talk about it with people who are my age and my peers and really anyone. I didn't know how to talk about. I don't actually have breast and ovarian cancer, but I have this unbelievable, incredible predisposition to getting both of these diseases. And I felt very stigmatized and knew that there needed to be a language where we could talk about this so we didn't feel like we were tainted, all of us who have genetic mutations, and that we could create a culture where this is something we could talk about without fear of discrimination and without fear of not only discrimination from employers or insurance, but discrimination from friends, colleagues, peers, you know, that again, that feeling that you're tainted or something is wrong with you because you basically inherited faulty DNA.
Yeah. Now, was there anything in your experience or your training as a science journalist that informed the way you put this movie together?
Well, I think what's interesting and part of that is, you know, I made this film at Cartemquin Films, which is a production company that has 40 years of experience of really putting a human face on some of these complex social issues. So it went away, in a sense, from a lot of my science journalism training, which is really kind of focusing on helping people understand what genetics mean, mm-hmm. you know, and taking the science and making it easy, you know, to translate, but actually really focusing more on the people themselves who are affected by having this information. So really telling the stories of the individuals who are struggling and families that are struggling with this information and what it means in a psychosocial context to look at yourself as someone, again, who is tainted or has this incredible 80% risk of getting breast cancer and what it means to really walk around every day with that knowledge. And so we really moved away from, I think, including a lot of science in the film and pure science. We do have an animation that we use to kind of explain how the gene works, how BRCA works, and how having a BRCA mutation could lead to cancer. But in a sense, we really focused on letting the women themselves and the family themselves tell the stories rather than having a lot about the, you know, future treatments or, you know, sort of the science of what's happening with BRCA.
You actually, there's a really interesting moment where Mary Claire King, who is the geneticist who actually found the connection between this hereditary linkage and the genetic mutation itself, she says, living with the predisposition is like being a cancer survivor. And that really stuck with me while I was watching the movie. Do you feel like that rings true?
Yeah, and I don't know what it's like to be a cancer survivor, thankfully. But I think in the sense that she was saying is that you're always looking over your shoulder. Once you have cancer, you're always thinking, is it going to come back? And I think living with BRCA for me is, you know, every time I have a pain in my breast or I have any kind of feeling of being bloated or just, you know, a fear, it's constantly in the back of your mind. Am I going to get cancer? When am I going to get cancer? Am I going to be able to fight it? I mean, once you know that that predisposition is there, it's very hard not to think about yourself as someone who will eventually get these diseases if you don't do something about it. So you are constantly kind of looking over your shoulder and pleading not to get these diseases. And I think that could be similar to someone who's worried about a recurrence of a disease.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned privacy just a moment ago. Now, you and the women that you talk with in the film were all tested for the mutation before the recent passage of the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. Can you talk a little bit about the privacy decisions that you made when you got tested and maybe how Gina actually is going to change those for people in the future?
Sure. I'm definitely someone who was impacted by the lack of protections when I got tested. I was very nervous that I could potentially be discriminated against by an insurance company and be dropped or be charged higher premiums because of this predisposition that I have. As you know, insurance companies, people who have had cancer have difficulty getting insurance coverage. So I thought, well, I have this incredible risk of getting cancer. They're going to see me as someone who could potentially be extremely expensive and be a liability. So I did actually test anonymously. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate that I knew what particular mutation I was looking for. So my test was only $250 as compared to the $3,000 price tag, or even higher now, I believe, that Myriad Genetics charges for the test. So I did test anonymously and I paid out of pocket. And again, I had the privilege of being able to pay out of pocket, and a lot of women don't. And I kept that information out of my medical records for years. So I would go in to a doctor and I would say, you know, they would be asking me all these questions, why are you getting this test? And I would say, well, I have the BRCA mutation. You know, and they'd go to write it down. I'd say, no, don't write it down, because I thought I could potentially lose my insurance. And I realized I was, in a sense, harming myself by not being able to keep it in my medical records, and that was a harmful thing. So I think many of the women like me who were living with this information pre-Gina were always worried, again, looking over our shoulders, are we adequately protected? And I think it was less that there was actually cases of women being discriminated against because of having BRCA, and more that fear, that fear of being discriminated against or their privacy being infringed. And I think that fear actually kept a lot of people from testing, and that's what we're working at now, is how do you kind of break down that culture of fear and tell people that this law is there to protect them and let them know their rights, that they do have the rights, that having, you know, faulty DNA doesn't make you someone who should be discriminated against based on that.
Certainly. Well, you'd mentioned, you know, being in a position where you could pay out of pocket for these tests, and you knew exactly what you were looking for, which allowed you to direct it a little bit more now. But the mutation affects women across ethnicities, but that doesn't necessarily mean that women of various backgrounds are tested with the same consistency. So there are disparities. Can you talk a little bit about the impact that this has on women's health of different backgrounds?
Sure, and I think that's a really great point, is that when BRCA first came out, I think it was really associated with Ashkenazi Jewish women. And a lot of the early studies were just done in Ashkenazi Jewish populations, where 1 in 40 individuals does have the mutation, which is extremely high. But the truth is that women of all ethnic backgrounds have BRCA mutations. And the estimate is anywhere from 1 in 400 to 1 in 500 people carry BRCA. And that's kind of a contradictory figure. I've seen it as high as 1 in 700. But the fact is that it's common, and it's common in all populations. And what we found in working on the film and talking to genetic counselors and looking at the research is that minority women were less likely to be referred. And I think part of that is that because of this initial research was done on Ashkenazi Jewish women, that physicians would not necessarily see a woman who was African American or Hispanic and Latina and think that they were, you know, even though they had this incredible family history, that it could be caused by a BRCA mutation, which in fact it absolutely could be. And because, as you see in the film, Martha, one of our characters in the film, tests for something called a variant of uncertain significance, which kind of shows you how imperfect our genetics knowledge is right now. And, you know, which was basically a change in the DNA, which we don't know if it's deleterious, meaning it caused her breast cancer, and she's a 3-time breast cancer survivor, or if it's just not a harmful change at all, just a regular change, you know, just kind of a fluke change in DNA that isn't deleterious. And I think because they haven't tested enough African-American women, the genetic counselor says in the film, that's part of the reason why they haven't reclassified these mutations that they're finding in the African-American population as either deleterious or benign. And I think that some, you know, it raises a lot of questions about access and a lot of questions about, you know, perceptions of who actually carries these mutations.
Are there other projects that you're aware of that are trying to close that testing gap and educate women, particularly in the African American community, who might not know about the possibility for testing?
Sure. There's certainly people out there who are working on that at universities. And the program that we profile in the film is actually funded by Avon. And that's a special assistance program in County Hospital in Chicago and John Stroger to actually provide genetic testing to women who are underinsured or uninsured to make sure that they actually have access to this information that they normally wouldn't be getting because of the cost of the test, because it is so high. But also there is a lot of education, I think, in educating physicians so that they understand that not only Ashkenazi Jewish women are at risk for having a BRCA mutation, but that it is much more common, you know, amongst all ethnic groups.
Certainly. Well, You've mentioned a couple of times the cost of the test, and part of that is connected to the fact that there is one company that provides testing for BRCA, which is Myriad Genetics. Can you talk a little bit about the way gene patenting controls this particular situation, and what people think about the fact that one particular company literally has a patent on the gene?
Sure. You know, like many of the women that I talked to and families in the film, I was very shocked to find out that genes were patented. My first response was, you know, how could you possibly patent a gene? It's something that exists in nature. So I think not that many people are aware of the fact that there is a lot of natural material and natural products that are actually patented. And I really wanted to go to Myriad to talk to the founder of the company and to the company and sort of ask kind of about why it's okay to patent genes. And that sort of pure and simple way, sort of why it's okay to patent genes. And what are some of the results of patenting genes? And when I was there in the interview, you saw that I asked him about research. And does patenting actually impact research? And how does it impact sort of the search for a cure? And very importantly, how does it impact both the accuracy of the test and the cost of the test? And I think those are two things that really come out in the film. By owning the exclusive patent, Myriad does control the cost of the test, and there is no other cheaper test that you could go get in another laboratory because they have the exclusive patent. And they also, you know, control the efficacy of the test. If they are missing mutations, there's not another test out there that could be a better test, for instance. You know, a cheaper test, a quicker test, and even a more accurate test because they do have the exclusive patent on the gene. It's not just the actual test, which I think people sometimes don't understand. It's not that they only have this one way of testing. They actually have the patent on the gene itself, the composition of that particular gene, because they sequenced it. And I think a lot of people are kind of amazed to learn that. So we wanted to bring that up in the film.
Well, another controversial thing that's happened connected to Myriad controlling the testing on this is that they've, in the fall, they actually started advertising, I believe starting in the Northeast, encouraging women of you know, with certain hereditary histories to seek out the test, which seems a little strange to be marketing a test for this predisposition when they are the only company that controls it. Can you talk a little bit about that particular push to advertise the test and the impact that might have on people?
Sure. And I think, you know, I can put myself in the position of being a high-risk woman whose mom had ovarian cancer, whose grandmother had breast cancer, who has, you know, kind of one of those classic families. If I was sitting at home one night watching that television commercial and I didn't know what I know now, that I do have this mutation, I would be terrified. I would see that commercial and I would be terrified. And if I didn't know how to find a genetic counselor, or I didn't, you know where to go to get the test, or I couldn't get to a genetic counselor for some reason, I think that would really create a lot of fear inside of me that for some women may be unnecessary. I mean, everyone is so afraid of breast cancer. It is an epidemic. I mean, it is, you know, you look around you, you know someone who has breast cancer, but only 5 to 10% of all breast and ovarian cancer is hereditary, which is not to say this is not a significant population, because we're disproportionately affected. We're affected young. But there's a lot of women out there who may have breast cancer in their family that was caused by a different gene that we haven't found yet, or that there isn't a test for, or was caused by other factors. So I think that there's a real responsibility in how we get this information out there. And what the film shows you is that it's not a simple blood test. There are repercussions afterwards in terms of how it impacts your life. And good genetic counseling is very important. And part of the fear is that what I've heard is that when those commercials came out originally and they were directly marketing to women, there weren't enough genetic counselors in those areas to actually field the calls of these women who are very distraught and distressed. And I think that's a very scary proposition, to be out there and to have this potentially devastating information that you don't know whether or not you're even appropriate to get the test, and not have the support system that you need to make the right decisions for yourself. And I think in knowing this population and what we show in the film, you really see how important getting that pre-test counseling and that post-test counseling is for these families. And, you know, especially when you have, we're talking about family dynamics here. You know, this is just straight family dynamics where sometimes you have one person who wants to know and one person who doesn't want to know. Without good counseling, that could create serious rifts in people's lives.
And there's actually a scene or a section of the movie, and one scene in particular, where there are three sisters who get together and decide to all be tested. And you actually are there filming at the moment where they're speaking with a counselor and learning about their predisposition. why is it important to show that particular moment and that particular support? It seemed like a very important part of the movie.
That's a great question. You know, and being there was really, first of all, I'm so grateful to Mary Claire King and her genetic counselor, Jessica Mandel, and those three sisters for allowing us in, the entire family, on what is such an incredibly personal and sensitive moment, especially when you have three young girls testing at the same time and knowing that most likely not all of them are going to have the same result. I think what was so important about showing that is it's almost impossible to explain to people what it means to actually get that information, and just the reaction in that moment, even though it goes on. And I think we also try to show in the movie that it's so much more than that particular moment, but just to show how the gravity of the information, I thought it was really important for us, and to show how a genetic counseling session actually happens, to sort of demystify a little bit what goes on there. We wanted to provide as much information for individuals thinking about testing as possible, and we thought it was important for them to actually see what that moment looks like and feels like as much as you possibly can without being those individuals. But it was, as a filmmaker, I think you are just so grateful. And as someone who went through that experience, and to think about, you know, a film crew being there at a moment where, I was absolutely devastated to find out my results. Just so grateful that they were open enough to let a camera in there, because they wanted people to understand what it's like to get this information. And also, I think there's some moments, you know, even without giving away what happened in that session, that you see that there is this information can be handled in a way that helps the people who are getting it prepare for the future. It can be handled in a way. And that's, again, speaks to good counseling.
Certainly. Well, let me sort of close on a fairly personal question. How are you preparing for the future? Because part of the movie is you going through a process of learning about your options to grapple with this particular mutation and deal with the chances that you have over the course of your lifetime of developing breast or ovarian cancer. Where are you in that process?
I think you're asking me an interesting point. I think in a way, the process of making the film was sort of this brilliant distraction, and this it was a wonderful way to talk about and tell the story without really thinking as much, even though in the film I'm absolutely thinking about my own life, but now that I'm no longer sitting and, you know, making it as a full-time, profession right now, you know, I'm not only sitting and making the film, I'm thinking a lot more about my own future and the choices that I have to make. And it's getting more frightening to me that I'm getting closer, I think, to making surgical decisions. I've certainly decided by 40 I have to remove my ovaries, which is absolutely the recommendation. My mom got ovarian cancer at 43. And you learn in this film that every woman has a magic age, and every woman has an image of someone who, every woman who was this, who had a relative, because, you know, it can be passed on through a father, so women, it comes unexpectedly. But women who have seen a relative go through breast or ovarian cancer, first degree, that's what they think of their lives. So I see 43 as a scary age. That's when my mom was diagnosed. So every year it becomes more real. And they're difficult decisions, you know. I think I can say that, you know, that I wish it was easier, and I could just answer this I'm going to have the surgery and I'm going to have it on this date. I'm still struggling.
Well, is there anything for people who might be listening who are either grappling with these decisions on a personal level, who are making decisions sort of within the medical or policy community? Is there anything that you think they need to understand about this particular film?
I'm glad that you actually mentioned that, because I think that there are a lot of resources out there for women and for families who are going through this. There's an amazing support group, an online support group called FORCE, and it's Facing Our Risk of Cancer Empowered, and their website is facingourrisk.org, where there's tons of information about screening options. There are, you know, one way to go with this really is to watch yourself extremely closely. We're getting better at catching cancer early and screening, and there's MRI technology for looking at the breast, which is, you know, really a new wonderful way of trying to detect cancer early. And there's also surgical options, and there's women out there who've been through and taken both tracks who are extremely supportive and are willing to talk very openly. And I think they gave also me the courage to come out and talk about it. And I think part of it is really sort of families actually getting together and talking about this history very openly with each other, and kind of moving away from female cancer and talking about breast and ovarian cancer. But there are certainly there's some amazing surgical outcomes out there. And there's women who, you know, you kind of see women cut off their breasts. You know, you kind of hear that sometimes in the media. And it's really, they remove the breast tissue that could become cancerous. And they oftentimes get beautiful reconstructions and they look great and they're still sexy and beautiful women, and that there are, you know, really empowering choices out there. So that, you know, we don't have everything we want, but I think that there's some very brave decision making happening. And in a sense, it is a gift to have this information, to think that you can avoid the fate of your genes and your destiny. And, you know, when you step back from it, that's a pretty awesome ability to have.
No, absolutely. And I think the movie really, really carries that message. You have some screenings coming up here in the D.C. area. Is that correct?
Yes. This won't air before this Saturday, correct?
No.
Okay. So our next screening is July 10th. We have two screenings at the E Street Cinema to celebrate the passage of the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. So we hope everyone will come out, and they're free. You can learn about them through the Genetic Alliance or on the InTheFamilyFilm.com website. And also, we will be airing nationally on public television on the POV series on October 1st, which I believe will be 10 p.m. In the D.C. area. But check local listings.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Johanna. It's
thank
been a pleasure
you.
Talking with you.
Thank you very much.